can be sad when you miss your favorite interview. Don't despair. Podcasts are ready on the all-new ESPN Chicago app. It's Waddle and Sylvie.
ESPN 1000.
A lot of time today being talked about the White Sox. They made the move. They got rid of Ricky Renteria today. Rickon met the media. Who's next? Is it A.J. Hinch? And the weird, wild story that the USA Today is reporting that Tony La Russa could be a thing. That would be weird.
Oh, boy.
And the wrong move. We'll take all your calls at 312-332-3776. We've not, because of that big, big Chicago story, spent a lot of time on the Bears yet. But we'll do that now, and I've got some NFL thoughts. I know Waddle and the gang have some as well. I read Dan Wieder's piece in the Chicago Tribune today as he dove into the film. And as we move forward to a big game against Carolina next week or later this week, let's bring him in right now. Dan Wieder joins us on the Corona Hotline. Hi, Dan.
I'm going to give you my Foxy voice. Well, they're all big games, Sylvie.
Yeah, you're right about that, yeah. Especially when you're 4-1.
It's pretty good Foxy imitation, too.
Had years to work on it.
Okay. Yeah. So
the offenses look the same, too, I got to say.
Yeah, they've got work to do. They've got a lot of work to do. There's no question about it. The luxury is that you were 4-1 and you bought yourself some cushion to make these improvements without that sort of suffocating tension that would be there if you were 2-3.
Oh, you know, you dove into the film, and I had an issue a bit with Matt Nagy, and I like Matt. I don't think he's a particularly good play caller, though. And I felt his Friday press conference, Dan, was more, it's not me, it's you, the Oppo of Costanza. I think he told you that he's never been a part of anything like this, even though he has with the Bears. I think he kept saying that it's about what they're doing and not me, even though he did mention the coaching staff a little bit. Do you believe that deep down he believes that the problem is the players and not his playbook?
I think he's trying to find the proper balance of all of these things, and I think he's struggling to get there. And I sort of came to the conclusion over the weekend that I'm with Matt. I'm at a point with Matt where I was with Mitch leaving Bourbonnais last year. And it's a point where I'm willing to give it more time. I'm willing to see, you know, 5-6 more weeks to see how it develops and evolves. But I'm concerned right now, and I'm greatly concerned, because we're far enough into Matt's tenure as a head coach to pretty much acknowledge that a lot of these things are trends. And the trends are that they don't get past 20 points on a regular basis, and they don't get past 300 yards on a regular basis. And these are basic prerequisites to being a high-level offense and a good football team in the 2020 NFL. And so they've got to figure things out. Matt's used different quarterbacks in his offense. He's used different offensive lines in his offense. He's used different receivers and tight ends and running backs. The common denominator is that he's been here for 2 seasons and 5 games, and they still can't get past 20 points and 300 yards on a regular basis. And so now they've got to figure out how to do that. He's got his own coaching staff in here. He's got the quarterback that he wanted to go out and trade for. There's no more excuses anymore. And so I think I've told you guys that November 2nd date is a date I would circle, that it gives them the Panthers game, the Rams game, and the Saints game to try to show signs of progress. If we get there and we're not seeing signs of progress and we're just seeing the same thing over and over again, and Matt just continues to say that the players aren't focusing on the details, then we've got big, big problems.
Well, this was the conversation I think we had a lot last week. If you get to that point, Dan, as you said, and you're not seeing the progress, and they go from being the 21st or 22nd ranked offense in Matt's first year to 29th across the board to 25th, at the end of the year, the record still is fairly impressive, then where do you go from there?
I have no idea. I have no idea. And that's why we're stuck. And
no, I know. It's confounding, isn't it?
The scary part here, Tommy, is that this team could squeeze out a 10-6, potentially an 11-5 season and get into the playoffs, perhaps undeservedly so, and lose a playoff game, and everyone keeps their job, and we're right back here at the start of October in 2021 with the same problems, with a defense that's aging and its window is closing a little bit. And so you want to make sure that whatever happens for the remainder of 2020 that there's signs of progress pointing in the right direction in the key areas of your team. And two of the key areas of your team are the head coach and the quarterback, right? And so we've got to see something out of those positions eventually. Otherwise, you're just sort of set up to have typical Bears, you know, luck or fate or whatever you want to call it, where you have these flash seasons with some promise, and then you have a bunch of mediocrity and a regression to third place or fourth place or whatever it may be. And so these are some really key games coming up in the near future here. And I'll turn it back over to you guys there, but I have a play that I want to discuss with you guys just because of what it signified in regards to that discussion that Matt and Nick were having on the sideline in the fourth quarter. I'm sure you guys have talked about that at length.
Yeah, go ahead. So take us down that road.
So, look, you saw that the Bears were moving the ball. They get inside the red zone, and you see Foles kind of giving the signal to the sideline, let's go. We've got them on their heels. We want to go. And Matt is looking through his giant call sheet to find the perfect call in his red zone package for the week to try to get something in that works there. When you're in the press box at these games, you get a better view of all the shuttling in and out of personnel. And at times it drives me crazy up there because you never get these players in a rhythm where it's like they're in for one play, they're out for two. They're in for two plays, they're out for three. And there's just this constant revolving door in the huddle. And so in that situation, Nick's saying, let's go. Matt goes to the call sheet. You send three players in and three players come off. Two of the three players that came off were Allen Robinson and Jimmy Graham, who have been your best red zone weapons all year. And you had Anthony Miller standing on the sideline as well. So essentially your three best scoring threats are standing on the sideline while you, Nick Foles, are in the huddle with Javon Wims and Cole Kmet and Darnell Mooney and Cordarrelle Patterson, right? And David Montgomery also. And so sometimes this goes back to what we talked about last week, where I think sometimes Matt gets so enamored with concepts and plays within the playbook over trying to showcase the best players that he has in his offense. And it, for me, it's unforgivable to go into a red zone series with three of your biggest touchdown threats standing next to you on the sideline. Obviously, the play call that was drawn up was a decent play call, and they would have had a touchdown if Bobby Massey blocks it right. But it still sort of is this fascinating case study in why is it this constant revolving door of personnel, and why aren't you trying to use your best players as much as possible?
When you look at this Bears personnel on offense, how do they stack up against the rest of the NFL or the top half of the NFL rosters, in your opinion?
As far as talent?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you've got enough there to work with. I really do. I think Allen Robinson is a top-tier receiver. We've talked about that. I think Jimmy Graham, say what you want about his age and how much he's regressed or declined or whatever word you want to attach to it over the years, he can still score for you when you get in close. I think Montgomery's a really good back. I think if you use Anthony Miller on a more regular basis, you can get more production out of him. So I think there's enough pieces there to do what we're talking about. We're not asking them to be the Chiefs. We're not asking them to be the Ravens. We're asking them to score 24 on occasion, 27 on occasion, to have a 400-yard output on an occasion, and to actually give this defense some help so that you're not constantly seeming like trying to claw out a game like last Thursday takes every ounce of energy you possibly have just to win a game at home.
One of the criticisms of Matt Nagy is he doesn't do what's best for the player. He does what's best for him. You know, what he thinks is the best call instead of playing to the strengths of his team. I want to throw out Mike Davis as an example of this, Dan, and I want your feedback because I think it's perfect for this week with the Bears playing Carolina.
Yeah.
In Carolina, you have Matt Rhule, okay, who just came out of college. He's a first-time NFL head coach. But yet Mike Davis replaces maybe the most dynamic running back in the National Football League, Christian McCaffrey, and he puts up numbers that are similar to McCaffrey. I would never say that Mike Davis is as good as that that would last for a long time. But I'm saying they're using him in the right way. Mike Davis a year ago came to the Bears with a decent track record from Seattle. And I was excited to see what the running back depth would be. And eight games later, whatever it was, they were releasing Mike Davis. Was it because, did Mike Davis fail with the Bears because Matt Nagy doesn't put guys in the best position to thrive?
Well, so that's a layered conversation, because Mike Davis was also going to be your number three back when you're talking about having David Montgomery, who you traded up to draft, and you want to make your long-term piece in the backfield, and you have Tariq Cohen, who you use as your joker back and your chess piece back there. And so Mike Davis was never going to have a prominent role in this offense, but the fact that he had no role in this offense was a little bit strange and disconcerting. And then, as you mentioned, eventually I think we got to late November and early December, and they cut the cord and sent them packing after making a free agent investment in him. And so one of the things, Sylvie, that this leads me back to is this question that we all have to stop and ask for a second. And so Matt has been here now for 2 seasons and 5 games, right? Who in this offense in two years and 5 games has exceeded your expectations? And who has developed to a level where you say, oh, that guy is head and shoulders better than when he got here? I'll just stop and see if you guys can just throw some names off the top.
There's not one.
Yeah, I mean, nothing. Like, you see flashes every now. I thought last year maybe Cody Whitehair, they gave him a big deal. James Daniels before he got hurt, I think some people pointed to him possibly.
Well, even the skill guys, Waddle. Yeah, I mean, just no, Anthony Miller hasn't lived up to it.
Inconsistent.
Mooney, maybe they're getting more out of Mooney than we thought. But, like, Allen Robinson, we knew you signed him for a reason. Tariq Cohen thrived in his first year under Nagy, and he's regressed really since. And I know he's hurt this year, but his numbers haven't come close to 18. 19 and then the beginning of...
It's hard to watch Cole Kmet get 3 targets and 1 reception in 3 weeks and then watch, you know, Claypool, who was drafted 4 or 5 guys behind him, run all over the field into Pittsburgh and give the Eagles
4 touchdowns.
Right, yeah, right. I mean, you're using draft capital on Anthony Miller. You're using draft capital on David Montgomery. You're using draft capital on Cole Kmet. You're using draft capital on Riley Ridley, who doesn't see the field ever and rarely sees his uniform on game day. And so these are things where you're saying, okay, eventually you've got to start squeezing some return on investment out of these people that you invest a lot in. And so this is why I'm at this point and why I drew that conclusion over the weekend, that this for me with Matt is where I was in August of 2019 with Mitch, right, where it's just, oh boy, you know, you're just scratching your head. You say, okay, I'm willing to give this a little more time. I think you guys know that by the time we got to Philadelphia last year, I had seen everything I needed to see out of Mitch and the verdict was in for me at that point. I didn't need any more evidence. And so we'll see. A month from now, are we going to all feel that way about Nagy, or are they going to get behind closed doors with Nick and say, hey, Nick, okay, you're a veteran here. We trust your command. We trust your presence. We trust you to speak up and criticize, as you did on the sideline the other night, to vocalize some of the things you'd like us to do more of and less of. Can we get this thing humming and in the right direction? Foles has described the rhythm of this offense as sporadic. That's not the word you want attached to your rhythm as an offense. And so now can you find that? And that's really the next 3 or 4 weeks, can you find that rhythm so it's not sporadic?
On a more positive note, one guy who did get back to being the player that you saw quite a bit was Khalil Mack. When you watch him on film, was it even more impressive than when you saw it on Thursday?
Yeah, it was preposterous. I mean, it really was. It was just preposterous because that was 2018, you know, September Khalil Mack, where it wasn't just the plays he was making, it was the energy that those plays provided, right? And it was just, you know, when you sack Tom Brady and then shoulder flip the offensive tackle to the ground, it gives the entire defense this adrenaline rush, like, oh man, you know, we've got this right now. We're humming in the right direction and flowing. And so when you've got Hicks playing the way he's playing, when you get a game like that out of Mac, when you get Kyle Fuller, who I think has got to be in the conversation as, you know, the team MVP through 5 games, making plays that swing the game like that, you remember why this defense is held to the regard it's held in, because they have the ability to change games and win games, and so they just need to do that more consistently and hopefully, again, you know, the one thing that I kept coming back to over the weekend was this team is 4-1, right? And so if you're able to make improvement and you're able to prove to the outside world that you're a work in progress and not a finished product, well, who knows what you can be by December? Who knows what you can be by January? And I promise you guys that if the Bears are lining up for a game on January 10th during the wild card round of the playoffs, we won't care how ugly the win was against the Giants or how ugly the win was against the Falcons or what it took to squeeze past the Buccaneers. You'll just be preparing for playoff football and hoping this team has got its momentum going in the right direction.
Good stuff, Dan. Anything else we need to know? Random thoughts?
Yeah, the only other random thought is we just got to keep our eyes on this COVID-19 stuff, right? Obviously, to have a positive test over the weekend and a case now with a practice squad offensive lineman, it just leaves you to kind of feel that unsettled feeling for the next 48 hours, 72 hours. And I know the Bears are hopeful that they've caught a little bit of a scheduling break where they weren't all together for 4 days or so. And so hopefully they can get back to work on Wednesday and it'll just be one isolated case and it won't be what we've seen in other franchises across the NFL, because guys, this NFL schedule is going to get messy in a hurry, and your hope is it doesn't screw with the plans and the things that are going on up in Lake Forest.
Good stuff, Dan. Thanks, Dan.
All right, guys, talk soon.
Dan Wiederer, the Chicago Tribune. I do have an update on the COVID situation. The owners are meeting tomorrow. I want to tell you about that. And what we always like to do on a Sunday when the Bears don't play is when you're watching these NFL games, what brings you back to the Bears? Like, what was your big takeaway from the rest of the league compared to the Bears? Let's do that coming up next.
You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Follow at Waddle and Sylvie and at TWaddle87 on Twitter.
Let's talk about the league, the NFL. We'll get to all your calls at 312-332-3776. You can also, when you get home from the office, if you're commuting right now, remember, always download that ESPN Chicago app. You can listen to the show anytime live or download the latest podcast. You can watch us on your computer at home as well or anywhere on the app. It's twitch.tv/ESPN1000Chicago. Want to give you some highlights from the NFL. Remember, the Bears played on Thursday. They beat the Bucks, so we got to watch the big games on Sunday, and this is some of the things that we saw.
Paul airs it out. Separation. Hauled in. Henry runs. The speed. Touchdown. Carr with another bomb. And the Raiders go in front. 72 yards. Ruggs is a blur.
Not going to keep it. Prescott breaks the tackle. And picks up a total of 9 more.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh. That does not look good, Jim.
Rivers steps up and throws. It's picked. Intercepted. And this is going to be a pick six for Harrison.
Quick snap. Murray pulls it down twice and then to the end zone for the touchdown. Mark Andrews, his fifth TD catch of the season. Fitzpatrick hit as he throws. What a throw! On target to Preston Williams. It's a touchdown for the Dolphins. How about that delivery?
Slot to the left is Claypool. As Roethlisberger throws, Claypool makes the catch. His fourth touchdown today.
Wilson surveys.
Fires, and it is going to be caught by DK Metcalf for a touchdown.
There you go. All the action courtesy of CBS, Fox, and NBC. That last one where the Vikings losing. They continue to tumble in the NFC North. Waddle, what was your big takeaway?
Well, the Chiefs and Raiders game was front and center yesterday. And I thought it was a tremendously entertaining game. And I think we've all kind of come to the same conclusion, haven't we, about the Raiders? Well, you know, they're not a perfect team. A, John Gruden can coach. B, Carr's pretty darn good quarterback. And they've got some weapons inside that offensive huddle. I mean, their record this year, they beat the Carolina Panthers in Carolina. Then they beat the Saints. They lost in New England to the Patriots. Then they lost to the Bills, two of the still good teams in the AFC. The Patriots will find out who they are long term, but the Bills have had a good year. And then they beat the Chiefs at Arrowhead yesterday. That's a pretty good start to the season for the Los Angeles Raiders, who gained. Obviously, you looked at that schedule to start the season and you thought, wow, 3-2 would probably be a decent go.
Yeah. Yeah, they're good. Yeah, I know. Again, when you could put up 40 in a shootout, you're capable. Like, the stat was, and we just had Dan on, and he alluded to the stat that he wrote. The stat was, like, 60% of the time, 60% of the time, it works every time. So Matt Nagy's coached 38 games with the Bears.
Yeah.
They have scored 21 points or more in, like, 15 of those games. It's 23 out of 38 they have not scored 21 points. 23 out of 38 games, Matt Nagy's team,
it's unbelievable,
has not scored 21 points.
Currently, they rank 27th in yards per game and 26th in points per game. The Chicago Bears average 323 yards and 21 points per game. I hate to tell you, if that does not improve throughout the course of the next 11 weeks, I don't think they get to the postseason. You know, and if they do sneak in with the 27th ranked offense, I don't think they're going to be long for the postseason. That's why I spent most of last week saying to you guys, like, this has got to get better soon. Not just for the remainder of this year, but you have to have a strong belief that this thing is pointed in the right direction offensively.
David in Park Ridge, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, David.
How are you doing today?
We're good.
You know, one of the comments I have to make is, you know, Nagy brought in DeFilippis, I think his name is, and Lazor, two guys that he worked with in the past, but two gentlemen that failed at offensive coordinator and with similar skills to Nagy. And I think Nagy does a good job as being a head coach, but as far as a play caller and a play designer, I think that's his weakness. So I think if the Bears really need to succeed, I don't think replacing Nagy may be the answer, because I think the players like playing for him, but he does need an offensive coordinator that can call the plays and design the plays and let Nagy be the head coach.
Agree with you. I've agreed with, for the last year, I've agreed with you, David. I don't think he can call plays. And you're right, DeFilippo has been fired twice in the last 2 years as offensive coordinator, once with the Vikings and once with Jacksonville. So that's the thing, and I know Waddle always contends he was brought over to be an offensive mind and develop talent, but I think he does the head coaching job well enough to keep him.
Yeah, if I get it as well. I like him. He's a good guy. He's good culture and everything else, but offensively, this has got to change, and when you've had a say, and not just the coaches but the players as well,
right?
Like, you can hand the play sheet to somebody else, but if the plays
on that
aren't
sheet
working,
yeah, right,
because your talent doesn't match up, you know, I mean, then where are you going to go with that?
Jordan in Maryville, you're on ESPN 1000. What's up, Jordan?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We're good.
We're good. Hey, you know, my take from yesterday's games was the Sunday night game. Watching the Vikings run the football, I was jealous. I said, as a Bears fan, if we could just run the ball half as well as they run it, we could probably score 21 more points or more. And my second take about the running game is, if the Bears don't shore up their run defense when they play the Vikings, they're going to have a problem, because they can move people. It was quite impressive how they ran the ball. It didn't matter who they played in yesterday. It was quite impressive how they did that.
You know, I it's the Vikings, Jordan, and look at the Browns the last couple of years. What have they done? Gary Kubiak comes to Minnesota and says, listen, the last thing we want to do, especially with the quarterback behind an offensive line that isn't good at pass protection, is have him drop back 35, 40 times a game. It's not what we should be doing. So what we're going to do is we're going to be a run-first, play-action team. Same thing's happened in Cleveland. And the Cleveland Browns have gone on and won, what, four in a row? And you see the progress that Mayfield is making inside a system that helps protect him from himself at times. Now, he threw a couple of picks yesterday, but at the end of the day, once again, they ran for 125 yards. Like, it's amazing what a difference it makes when a coach takes what he has and tries to get the most out of them and put them in a position to get
the most out of them. You understand my point about Mike Davis, don't you?
Yes.
He wasn't good enough for Matt Nagy to use. And that's the point that Mike Davis isn't God's gift. But he did have a role. It was a decent signing by Ryan Pace. But how do we know that Anthony Miller wouldn't thrive elsewhere?
Don't know.
How do we know that right now, if on the Steelers, if Cole Kmet was on the Steelers, maybe he would have caught four touchdowns. But instead, he has like four targets all year.
So my conclusion can only be one thing. It's not this or that. It's both.
Yeah. 332-3776. We'll continue to take your phone calls, plus the good, the bad, the dirty. That's coming up next.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports.
Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
All right, we're taking your calls at 332-3776. Big topics, the NFL from yesterday and how it relates to the Bears. And, of course, the big news with the White Sox. We'll circle back to that. And would you want somebody involved in the Astros cheating scandal as your manager with a guy like A.J. Hinch? 332-3776. Do you remember Brandon, who we talked about on Friday, who we talked to on Friday? Do you remember with what he called about Waddle with the bet?
I forget. What was it?
So he was the guy who put, I think, $1,000
on
the parlay.
Oh, yeah, yes, yes.
And you gave him, you came to the good conclusion. We talked it out. He's a guy who's throwing around $1,000 parlays.
Yeah.
And he won at the Bears part of that. And then he needed Jacksonville, I believe,
to win.
Beat Houston, yeah. Yes. And then you told him, look, cash out and then just put a few. It was either you or Abdallah put a few bucks then on Jackson.
I think it was Abdallah that said that.
Brandon in Chesterton is back. Brandon, what did you end up doing?
What's up, guys? I ended up pulling out on Sunday morning, man.
Whoa, be careful.
I call it a...
Just being careful.
No, I pulled out, man. It was one hell of a ride, but, you know, I had to call it quits.
Okay, so what was your final take from this bet?
So I was looking at it, and I was looking at the Texans, how they're four games that they lost, man. I mean, they were Kansas City, the Ravens.
Yes, they had a tough record.
They had a really tough schedule going into it, and what really did me over was when Jacksonville got their butts whooped by Miami Dolphins. I was like thinking, I was like, man, if they get whooped by the Dolphins, like, man, you know, they're going to get whooped by the Texans.
But Brandon, I don't know if you watched that game. That the final was 30-14.
It was close. Yeah.
But that game was much closer than the final score.
Oh, it definitely was. Yeah, it definitely was. I was watching it somewhat. I was like grinding my teeth over it. But I think they were up 10-3 in the first half.
Jacksonville was up 7-3.
7-3, yeah. I meant they missed those back-to-back field goals.
Yeah. How much did you win then? How much?
I cashed out with $1,500. It was $2,500 altogether, but I put a grand into it. So I walked away with about $1,500.
There you
That's
go.
That's awesome. Good stuff, Brandon. Well done, congratulations. Brandon.
Thanks to you guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we talked it out. We're always here for you. We may not always have the right answer, but we're here to discuss any issue you may have.
We'll talk through the nonsense.
Yeah, that's what we do. Sean in Cedar Lake, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Sean.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Really quickly, my take on all this is if Nagy is really as great of an offensive mind as everybody says he is or was or whatever, why is it that he needs six other offensive minds to have input in his game plans? And then my takeaway from watching the rest of the NFL yesterday was all these rookies and second-year offensive players just go off, and they're blossoming in these systems, and we can't find not one guy. It's just it's frustrating as a Bears fan, you guys. I'll hang up and I'll listen.
Listen, go back to the Thursday night game against the Bucks. There were guys on the Bucks team that were making plays in our secondary that I didn't even know who they were.
Think about this.
I mean, Tyler Johnson was a fifth-round pick this year. Tyler Johnson in the game against the Bears had four catches for 61 yards. I mean, looked solid, making plays, contributing.
Right, right. When you were talking about Chase Claypool, all right, I was going through this. You know, there are just some teams who always get it right. They always get it right. And maybe the answer is because they got it right with the quarterback and they're able to do this. I just brainstormed, over the last 10, 15 years. Do you know some of the names that the Steelers have drafted at wide receiver?
Dude, they've been great.
Listen to this. Hines Ward,
yep.
Plexico Burress, Santonio Holmes, Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, Mike Wallace, Emmanuel Sanders. Those are all like original Steelers.
Guys,
and now they add a guy who could catch four touchdowns in a game?
Colbert has been one of the best player personnel guys in the league for years.
Well, take someone off his staff and so they could draft us a wide receiver.
Well, you made a good point too, though. I mean, like when Ben's throwing it to you, you're going to look better because the decisions are probably more right than they are wrong quite a bit.
Right. And if Anthony Miller was drafted by the Steelers, would he be this blossoming young guy that we love because they develop him better than a guy like Matt Nagy is developed?
I think all of these questions are fair. Like, what the Panthers, when we see the Panthers on Sunday, I can't guarantee you how they'll perform. But the Panthers have got some weapons on the outside that make plays.
Robbie Anderson's doing
well. Robbie Anderson's there. DJ Moore has been there. Yeah. Curtis Samuel has been good as well. I mean, like, there are guys around the league that are showing what they're capable of doing. I mean, again, look at what
they've won three in a row without their best player.
Yes.
John on the South Side, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Good. We're good.
So, listen, when we complain about Cole Kmet not getting targets or, you know, not running the ball enough, is that a product of Matt Nagy not really getting it? Or is that more of a product of, you know, him not having complete confidence in those offensive line? And, you know, if it's not confidence in his offensive line, you know, is that a problem between Pace and Nagy not getting the right guys involved?
You know what, John, I said this a little bit earlier, and I think I'm not trying to be a wise ass. I think it's both. And I think it's played out in the stats. Like, you can overcome some of that stuff. Like, a really good offensive coordinator can take lesser talent and scheme guys open, and guys can make plays, and you'll be like, wow, that was pretty good. They're 27th in yards per game. They're 26th in points per game. That's on back of a 2019 season where they were 29th and 29th.
Right, right.
Like, I mean,
we thought the baseline was his first year. They've only gone down since then.
Right, here's a good example. The play to Mooney is purely poor execution by the quarterback. Like, it all factors in. Like, then we can talk about, hey, what were you trying to do when Nick Foles wanted to keep things going quick? And you wanted to call timeout and put guys on the field. And then the answer from Matt is, well, if you watch the film, you'll see Cordarrelle Patterson is running free. But, yeah, you gave the other team a chance to catch their breath. And in that process, their defensive guy blew past our offensive guy. And Nick never had a chance to throw the football.
Eli in Hoffman Estates, you're on ESPN 1000. Hey, Eli.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
We're good.
Hey, I know the Seahawks won last night, but that defense has been awful all season. And the Vikings should have won. If that guy bounces outside, that's an easy touchdown. I was just wondering if you think Russell can make up for it all season long, and you think they're legit, or if you think it's going to come back to bite them.
I don't think you can win a championship with that defense. I think you can have Russell Wilson, who's the MVP of the league, and you'll get to the postseason. But I find it hard to believe that that team can win a championship with the league's worst defense.
I want to bring that to your attention a little bit later. Make sure we circle back to that, okay? Because I'd like to know then who are the contenders if Seattle's not.
No, I said they're contenders. I don't think you can win a title with the league's worst defense. I mean, you're a good contender. You're going to the postseason.
Yeah, I'm saying like true contender, like a championship. I mean, I would put them in a group of five. We can get to that in a little bit.
By the way, I thought that the Mike Zimmer decision to go for it was also the right decision. I know that was something that a lot of people were contemplating. If he makes that first down, you basically run out the clock and you win the game. You would run for 200 yards, and the play was actually there, and the back didn't bounce the ball out. So I thought that was a really interesting game as well.
Okay, you could have made that your good and good, bad, and dirty.
Well, I didn't.
But find another one now. Good, bad, and dirty coming up next. The 4 o'clock hour of Waddle and Sylvie is brought to you by the Home Loan Expert. They can close in less than 30 days, and you can skip 2 full months of mortgage payments. Contact Ryan Kelly at thehomeloanexpert.com.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
The good.
It's gone! Oh, my God!
The bad.
That is so bad, that is absolutely brutal.
And the dirty.
I'm talking about nasty.
Wow, so many stories are running through my head right now.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago.
That's right. Our recap of the sports weekend with the good, the bad, the dirty is brought to you by our great friends at White Claw Hard Seltzer. Crafted using seltzer water, 5% alcohol, and a hint of natural fruit. Available in 8 all-natural fruit flavors, it's low-carb, gluten-free, and only 100 calories. White Claw Hard Seltzer, made pure. Please drink responsibly. Waddle, you're good.
I think somebody else is probably going to use Alex Smith, so I went away from Alex Smith. Did you see Tom Brady's tweets congratulating LeBron James? It was LeBron James's head on Brady's body holding up four fingers.
It's fantastic.
Tom finally found his sense of humor. He lost it on Thursday in the loss here in Chicago, but found his sense of humor. I thought it was a great tweet honoring another NBA title for LeBron James and the Lakers.
Now can he virtually shake Nick Foles' hand?
I don't think he needs
Can we make up for that one? My good is what the White Sox did today. Look, Rick Renteria did what he was asked to do, and that was take over a team in a rebuild, create a really good culture, develop some guys, and he did exactly that. So now, instead of just standing pat, you went out and you're going to be a big boy baseball team. You're ready to win right now. The window is open, as Rick Hahn declared, and you're going to go out and get an established manager who's been there and done that. And I think that's really, really good by the White Sox. Boys, what do you have?
My good goes to the Lakers. Shout out to the Lakers for winning Game 6 of the NBA Finals. I don't think they knew this, but they had a groundswell of fans known as Bachelor Nation as new fans of the Lakers yesterday, because the new season of The Bachelorette is supposed to start on Tuesday, and had there been a Game 7, it was going to be pushed a week. So the groundswell of Bachelor Nation on Twitter was hilarious, because they all found out like yesterday morning that the season was going to be delayed another week if the Lakers, if the Heat won.
God, so they were all rooting for the Lakers.
They were all rooting for the Lakers. It was very funny. It was very, it is about to be the most dramatic season of Bachelorette history.
You're the worst.
I'm glad to hear that, Black.
You're the worst. He's the worst with this. Well, how do you guys put up with this?
They're all bad. All the Bachelor fans are bad.
We have a few former Bachelor contestants that are big fans of the show, so I would watch your damn mouths.
Shout out to them. Shout out to them.
Watch your damn mouths.
I hope that they've parlayed that into a very successful career.
Watch your damn mouths.
You're unbelievable.
Shout out, Black, you're good.
Give me the teams at the top of the AFC North, the Ravens, the Steelers, and the Browns. I think all three are good. And, you know, the Steelers, the game yesterday against the Eagles, I think a lot of people thought the Steelers would kind of not be as talented as they are, but that performance offensively, and the Browns beating the Colts, and the Ravens continue to roll.
Steelers have a fantastic defense. Looks like Ben's getting his rhythm.
So my good is a collective for the top of the AFC North.
All right. Do you want to shout out to, again, Alex Smith, since no one took it? Waddle?
Yeah, Alex Smith. I mean, it's such a great story, but I got to tell you, I watched when I could see it on Red Zone. I mean, I was watching through my fingers, because I was scared to death that Aaron Donald was going to kill him.
You got to see the documentary and what his leg looked like and what he went through just to be, and he's completing a pass right away, leading them to a field goal drive. The rest of the game was ugly, but he should win the Comeback Player of the Year award just based on that.
Yeah, I agree, regardless of how he performs.
What's your bad?
My bad is the Cincinnati Bengals doing Bengals things, and that's getting their young quarterback killed. He was sacked, I believe, 7 times yesterday by the Ravens. That's a grand total of 22 times he's been sacked, and I don't know if you've seen some of the highlights. He's been cracked hard a bunch. Listen, kid's a talent, and he's proven. He's already thrown for over 1,300 yards. You better protect him, or this story is going to continue to be a bad one in Cincinnati. Bad job protecting your young, talented quarterback.
That's really good. Yeah, you're right about that, because, like you said, far too many teams ruin their quarterbacks. Yeah. My bad is this. How often do you go to Netflix and you look on the recommendations for you, or you look on what's trending, the top 10 most watched things, and you know me, I love watching a good documentary. Well, I am warning everybody that I watched a really bad documentary, because I thought it was going to be like a twist in it, one of those like Making a Murderer documentaries. There's this hour and a half documentary called American Murder, The Family Next Door. And it's about a family in Colorado. I am warning you right now, do not watch it. Yeah. There is no twist. There's nothing good. It's just an hour and a half of a bad story. So do not watch that documentary because you will be sick to your stomach.
I fell asleep.
Wife and me
my wife saw it. I fell asleep halfway through.
Terrible, right, Chris? Yeah. No, there's no plot twist. Yeah, and it was just bad stuff.
Well, right. And if you don't know what the news story is, then, I could see you thinking there's going to be something juicy at the end, but there's not.
He showed no remorse either the whole time.
If you remember when this story happened, what was this, 2018? Like, it was pretty obvious from the get-go, just from following through the news, what was actually going to be uncovered there. So
I didn't know much about this story, so I watched it and I think, oh, there's going to be a twist, and no, it was just a heinous crime and a bad documentary.
You know what's a good documentary on Netflix? The one with the octopus. You guys seen this?
I have not.
No,
it's like My Octopus Teacher or something. A guy befriends
Netflix or Cinemax?
Netflix. Netflix, Waddle.
Are you sure?
Netflix.
Ex-hamster.
They become... Wait, you haven't even heard what this is about, and you're making the jokes. He becomes friends with an octopi undersea. I'm not kidding.
Is this for stoners?
No, I'm serious. This is like a National Geographic deal.
Okay.
It's pretty interesting.
I'll look at it.
He's been telling us, our golf group yesterday about this stupid octopus movie for 3 weeks.
Does he get inked?
No, see, like, you guys are dog people. Dogs have feelings. You know, dogs know.
A dog bit my foot Saturday night. Bit my foot twice as I tried to move my foot in bed at 4:30 in the morning.
Well, don't move your foot.
Yeah, don't move
wake
your foot,
up Lola.
I'm just telling you. When you watch it, you're going to be like, I learned a lot about the octopus.
Get the title for us, then. I don't want to be searching octopi.
It's called My Octopus Friend.
Why not? Teacher.
My octopus teacher.
Yeah, my octopus teacher.
I'm telling you, there's a few movies.
Just don't watch it on your computer when the kids are around.
Why won't you Google that? What's wrong with that Google?
It's an animal. Fired.
It's an animal.
My first octopus teacher.
What are your bets? Because we got to wrap this up. And then
the Alabama defense. Congrats on the win, but what the hell was that? What the hell was that? Over 600 yards given up to Ole Miss. It's the first time they've given up over 600 yards since the AP poll era, which goes back to like the 20s. It was awful. Just absolutely atrocious. They're going to lose to Georgia this week because their defense this year is crap. Crap. Yeah.
Sylvie, it's My Octopus Teacher.
Okay, that's got to be your bad, too.
No, my bad is anyone today having the LeBron GOAT conversation. You're bad.
Lazy. Yeah. Do some new stuff.
My dirty, a piggyback real quick on what Abdallah said about Alabama. The entire SEC defense is not played.
Kentucky played well this
weekend. 90% of the SEC, nobody plays defense.
Same with the NFL. It's the same in the
NFL.
It's
not as bad as the SEC, brother.
Ooh, it's pretty bad. My dirty is Stan Bowman still has a job. What about you guys?
I'm going to give you Russell Wilson last night in the fourth quarter, the comeback, the drive at the end. That's dirty.
Over 600 yards. Come on. And then Lane Kiffin kicked. He just punted at the end. He literally kicked the game away. He kicked the field goal and gave up.
My Octopus Teacher. That's the name of it.
The 3-0, whatever, Netflix. Number two, coming for that number one spot.
So was that your dirty, too?
Yes, it's all of them.
I like it. All right, there you go. The good, the bad, the dirty. If you want to react to anything you saw this weekend, Mark Jean Greco's off. We are guest-free for the next hour. So hop on your phone lines right now at 332-3776. And the White Sox make a big decision. Will they hire a guy who's suspended for his role in cheating? That debate in 2 minutes.